This lady over here came up to me last night after my talk on Reiki, and she told me that she used to be a Reiki master. That's the third level where you initiate people into it. And she was saved 5 years ago. And I talked to her at length, and she was deep into the New Age. She had spirit guides, and very dark, sinister forces were at work. And she was delivered for the most part from the bondage. She tells me there still is residue, and she would like to be freed of that residue. So if any of you have a ministry for, dealing with demonic oppression, you know, she would most likely want to talk to you. But she verified what I was saying last night, that Reiki is occultic. Reiki is demonic. I mean, it is not just some kind of physical practice. It's not something that's innocent. And she also said that Reiki is extraordinarily pervasive here in the Calgary area. She said there are tons and tons of Reiki channelers in southern Alberta. You know, so that's one of the reasons I wanted to present this. If there was just a little Reiki, if there was just a few Reiki channelers here and there, then, you know, you could accuse me of being a sensationalist, you know, making a mountain out of a molehill, so to speak. But I kind of suspected that Reiki is big in Portland, it's big in Seattle. I mean, Reiki is big. I live in a town of 150,000, and I estimate there's probably 1,000 Reiki channelers there. And also would be willing to talk to anybody who has questions about this, because she was a Reiki master. She was doing Reiki. She said she was on a beach somewhere, and she had a lineup of people, and she was doing Reiki on them. This heat was just pouring out of her hands. So any of you, this is a real treasure here, because you can see, you can talk to her and see this from both a perspective of someone who's in the New Age and someone who is now a Christian. So I would encourage you, if you're really concerned about this, that you would talk to Leanne after, you know, during the coffee break or whatever. Okay, thank you, Leanne. Contemplative prayer. This is kind of what I'm known for. I wrote a book called A Time of Departing, and it's based on, you know, where Paul says that in the latter times, some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. And also in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, where Paul also talks about that day, the day of the Lord, you know, the tribulation, shall not come except there come a falling away first, and then the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. So I believe that what we're going to look at here is that falling away, that right now the evangelical church, you know, is in the process of falling away from the traditional gospel toward the mystery of iniquity. This is, how many of you heard of Vatican II? No, anything about Vatican II? Okay, in the early 60s, I think 62 to 65, Pope John the 23rd convened Vatican II, which is supposed to revitalize the Catholic Church, or, you know, make it more modern, so to speak. And this is the gentleman who was called the brains behind Vatican II, a guy named Karl Rahner. And he said, the Christian of the future will be a mystic, or he will not exist at all. In other words, in the future, anybody who claims to be a Christian will be a mystic. This is a book called The Big Book of Christian Mysticism, The Essential Guide to Contemplative Spirituality. Now, I have to say, that word contemplative, it's misleading. You know, like yesterday we saw meditation, you know, it means, most people think it means to think deeply, but in that case it means to empty the mind. Well, here's the same situation, that the word contemplative normally means to think deeply, right? But in this case, the word contemplative means not to think at all. It's based on the same technique as Hindu, Buddhist, and New Age meditation, is emptying the mind through repetition, through chanting sacred words or phrases. Anyhow, Carl McCullman says, in the future, all Christians will be mystics. We need to let go of the idea that some Christians are mystics while some are not. And traditionally, by mystic, it's somebody who uses a technique to get in touch with God. You know, like being born again, of course, is supernatural. You know, people that are born again have the Holy Spirit, which is supernatural. But it's not being a mystic. Being a mystic means that you're using some kind of a method or spiritual technology to access the supernatural world. Contemplative spirit, this is actually from Christianity Today, and they kind of nailed it perfectly. Critics, that's me and Warren, critics argue that contemplative prayer is rooted in Eastern mysticism and thus not a practice a Christian should engage in. That was Christianity Today, 2010. And that's really the truth. That's what I have to prove this morning, you know, that contemplative prayer is rooted in Eastern mysticism. It's not Eastern mysticism per se, but it's rooted in Eastern mysticism, which leads to the same perceptions. Listening beyond human thought. Practically, you know, Christians, when they pray, they think, right? You know, your mind is turning, your mind is active. Well, this Rodney Romney here was the pastor of the First Baptist, not the picture, of course, but the quote. he was the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Seattle, Washington. And he was a major proponent of contemplative prayer. And he says, we cannot reach God through our minds. We can only reach God in absolute stillness when the mind has been transcended. God is only attained through that consciousness described as unknowing, which would be a trance. You know, in fact, there's a treatise from the 14th century called The Cloud of Unknowing, and it's a primer on this type of prayer. The Cloud of Unknowing. So you can only know God. You can't know God just by reading the Bible and having the Word speak to you. You can only know God through mystical trances, basically, is what he's saying. This is an ancient practice. This is a book from Nav Press. You know, you've all heard of the Navigators. This is put out by their book company, Nav Press, When the Soul Listens. And Jan Johnson, who teaches this, says, contemplative prayer, in its simplest form, is prayer in which you still your thoughts. That doesn't mean just being in a place that's quiet where you can, you know, collect your thoughts. It means you get rid of your thoughts. This puts you in a better state. Now, here's the appeal here. This is why people are going for this. This puts you in a better state to be aware of God's presence. Now, did you all get that? God's presence. And it makes you better able to hear God's voice correcting, guiding, and directing you. Now, folks, I believe that just being born again, just having the Holy Spirit, is enough to have God correcting, guiding, and directing you. Amen?
Amen.
Okay, this is a crucial point here to remember. But the people that promote this say, no, no, just being a regular Christian, being a non-mystical Christian, you're kind of spiritually retarded, you know, if I may use that word. You're just not getting anywhere in your Christian life, so you have to still your thought. You have to go into this unknowing, and then you can really get the presence of God. Well, I believe that the presence they get is the presence of familiar spirits. This is a man named Marcus Borg, who, by the way, Marcus Borg is very popular with United Pastors here in Canada. They really love him. And he has written quite a number of books promoting Christian mysticism. And he comes right out and says, contemplation typically involves the silent repetition of a mantra. He says it's a mantra, whether a single word, a short phrase, or a series of short phrases. So this is one of the major proponents of contemplative prayer, actually saying that, you know, it's a mantra. Now, some of you may know pastors or, you know, Bible colleges, and you say, well, contemplative prayer is using a mantra. And they go, no, 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 it's not using a mantra. Only Hindus and Buddhists use mantras. This is Christian, you know. Well, they're saying that because they think that if you use Christian words, it's not a mantra. Like if you go, Om, you know, that's a mantra. But if you go, Maranatha, over and over again, that's Christian. So you see the intellectual dichotomy here? But it's the repetition that makes it a mantra, not the source of the word. This is a book called The Signature of Jesus. It claims that if you do this type of prayer, you will have the signature of Jesus on your prayer life. that you really need this to get anywhere in your Christian walk, the goal of contemplative prayer is the following. The first step in faith is to stop thinking about God at the time of prayer. Now, that sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it? Kind of weird. But that's what we're looking at here. In other words, if you're thinking about God, the mind is active, you know, thoughts are flowing. So if you really want to get God, this is what you do. Choose a single sacred word or phrase. Without moving your lips, repeat the sacred word inwardly, slowly, and often. Well, this is classic New Age occultic meditation, but it's under the guise of Christian prayer. This gentleman here, Michael Leach, was the president of the Catholic Book Publishers Association. So he's no, you know, slob. I mean, he was very influential and very prestigious. And he comes right out and says that this type of prayer, this mysticism, is New Age. He calls it New Thought Catholicism. He says, many people believe that the spiritual principles underlying the New Age movement will soon be reincorporated into the mainstream of Catholic belief. In fact, it's happening in the United States right now. This sheds new light on the spiritual truths about who we really are. So he says the spiritual principles underlying the New Age movement are being reincorporated into the mainstream. Now get that, mainstream of Catholic belief. Now what did he mean by reincorporated? Well, this method comes from a group of monks who lived in the deserts of North Africa, Egypt, you know, in the Middle East during the Middle Ages. And they were called the Desert Fathers. St. Anthony, I think, was one of them. And they were hermits. This is from a book called Finding God. And this is how they developed contemplative prayer. It was a time of great experimentation with spiritual methods. Many different kinds of disciplines were tried. Many different methods of prayer were created and explored by them. So in other words, this didn't come from the Bible. You can't turn to any of, you know, the Gospels or writings of Paul or Peter and see that you have to repeat a sacred word over and over again to get the presence of God. It was developed by the Desert Fathers. This is where it came from. You know, it's not scriptural. It's not biblical. Now, there is a verse that they will use many times to promote this. Perhaps you've heard it. It's in Psalm. I can't remember the exact Psalm something. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. What that's talking about, if you look at it in context, Israel is facing a major threat. You know, it looks like, you know, things are pretty dangerous. You know, that Israel could be destroyed by her enemies. And that be still, you know, means to calm down, to relax, you know, to not get all worried. You know, be still or, you know, relax and know that I am God. In other words, I'm going to protect you. Has nothing to do with emptying the mind, has nothing to do with chanting mantras, has nothing to do with going into mystical states. Okay, the way of the mantra, this is from a book called The Dawn of the Mystical Age. The 4th century Desert Fathers understood that a simple device was needed to keep the monkey mind from wandering. Now, the monkey mind is a Buddhist term, and it's a reference to your normal thinking process. In other words, when you're in the state of mind you are in now, you're always thinking about something, right? There's always thoughts flowing. And Buddhists call that the monkey mind. In other words, monkeys are always kind of chattering and kinetic. You know, they're always jumping around and chattering. You know, you never see monkeys that are just still. You know, they're always just running around. Well, the Desert Fathers believed that, you know, that was, you can't find God that way, so you need a simple device. Thus, the mantra method of prayer, which had been introduced centuries before by Buddhists and Hindus. See, they picked this up from Buddhists and Hindus, came to be a staple form of Christian prayer, not only for the Desert Fathers and Mothers, but for Christians down through the ages. Now, what they mean by Christians down through the ages, is monks. You know, the Desert Fathers borrowed it from Hindus and Buddhists, the idea of going into trances, and people took it up to Europe, and it became embedded in the monastic system, in monasteries and convents. And maybe you've heard of some of the St. Teresa of Avila, St. John of the Cross, Meister Eckhart, and it doesn't matter, but Julian of Norwich. But anyhow, there's these like mystical superstars in Catholic literature down through the centuries. And that's what's being referred to here, the reach of Christian mysticism. See, now, the reason I'm telling you this now, in our lifetime, in the 1960s, this was brought out of the monasteries and started to be spread around among the Catholic laity. And then it started to become popular with the mainline Protestant churches. And now it's starting to be accepted by evangelical Christians, you know, even fundamentalists. How many of you heard of Norman Vincent Peale? You may find this surprising, but he was an early proponent, of contemplative prayer. His book, The Power of Positive Thinking, he actually has a reference to contemplative prayer. He says, "Throw your mind into neutral. When you have attained a quiescent state, that means a trance, then begin to listen for the deeper sounds of harmony and beauty, of God that are to be found in the essence of silence." So in other words, when you throw your mind into neutral, then you can hear God's voice, audibly speaking to you. You can actually hear Him. You can hear you have the presence of God then, the essence of silence. Well, Norman Vincent Peale tutored a man named Robert Schuller. They were very close friends, and Peale was like a father to Schuller. And Schuller says in his book, Prayer, My Soul's Adventure with God, "Find yourself coming alive in the garden of prayer called meditation." Well, he calls it meditation, but it's the same thing. Yes, the New Agers have grabbed hold of meditation. Hey, Christian, hear me. Let's not give up the glorious God-given gift of meditation by turning it over to those outside our faith. Well, he doesn't understand that that meditation was makes them New Agers. You know, it wasn't like they stole it from Christians. He's stealing it from them. Or Peale stole it from them. And so Schuller knew that there are people saying, "Oh, don't New Agers do this?" And he goes, "Hey, Christian, hear me. You know, let's not give up the glorious God-given gift of meditation by, you know, letting the New Agers have it." Well, the thing is, friends, this type of meditation is not a glorious God-given gift. You know, it was stolen by the Desert Fathers. If he could find somewhere, if Peale and Schuller could find somewhere in the Bible where you do throw your mind into neutral, then, you know, I'd repent and say, "Yeah, you're right. You know, I got it wrong." But you can't find that anywhere. Okay, Dr. Robert Schuller, in his book, Discover Your Possibility, says, "In a matter of seconds, I can get myself in such a state of relaxation," that's meditation, "where I'm not at all conscious of my body weight, but sense that I am floating suspended in space." Now, when you folks pray, how often do you feel like you're floating suspended in space? You know, it just doesn't happen. I mean, you're grounded. And this is when I go into two-way prayer. Two-way prayer. Well, that means that he's not talking to God. Supposedly God's talking to him. Well, how many of you know that Schuller had a school for pastors? How many of you know that? It was called the School for Pastoral Studies, and tens of thousands of evangelical pastors went to this school over a course of like 30 or 40 years or so, and he passed on this practice to all these pastors that went to this school, and one of them was Rick Warren. And Rick Warren became, and this is why, you know, people are critical of him. You know, there's a variety of reasons, but this is one of the major reasons that he is a promoter of this type of prayer. And on his website, they sell this book. And Rick Warren says, this handbook is full of practical, accessible guidance. Well, this book is basically a handbook on how to do mantra-type prayer. And I'm having trouble with my glasses this morning. I have to kind of take my glasses off here. In her book, Adele Alberg Calhoun calls Basil Pennington one of her spiritual tutors. Okay, this is what... So the woman that put this book together, that wrote this book, was tutored by Basil Pennington. And Basil Pennington said the following. He wrote a book called Finding God at the Center. Yeah, my eyes are kind of watery for some reason. He says, okay, this is her tutor saying this now. This is not from the book, but this is the guy, the tutor, saying this. We should not hesitate to take the fruit of the age-old wisdom of the East and capture it for Christ. Indeed, those of us who are in ministry should make the necessary effort to acquaint ourselves with as many of the Eastern techniques as possible. So Basil Pennington was totally immersed in Eastern mysticism. Yeah, this is very awkward. I mean, yeah, I got kind of water. I don't know if it's allergies or whatever, but I have a hard time reading the... I didn't have a problem yesterday. If I stand back, that'll be... Anyhow, this is a place called the Shalem Institute for Spiritual Formation. It's in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., and they train spiritual directors here. This is basically what the talk is about, that... Throughout evangelical Christianity, there's a term called spiritual formation or spiritual direction, spiritual directors, and this is where they're trained. In fact, I've speculated. You see the man, I wish I had a pointer. This guy right here, right there. My publisher and I believe that could be Henry Nouwen. That kind of, he wears those kind of sweaters and has that kind of hair, so that could be the writer Henry Nouwen. And right next to him, the guy on his right is Tilden Edwards, who founded the Shalem Institute. And this is from Newsweek magazine: silence, appropriate body posture, and above all, emptying the mind through repetition of prayer has been the practices of mystics in all the great world religions. And they form the basis of which most modern spiritual directors guide those who want to draw closer to God. Now, it doesn't say some modern spiritual directors. It doesn't say many modern spiritual directors. It says most modern spiritual directors. Most means the majority, right? So this is the way that the majority of spiritual directors are... promoting, you know, the presence of God. Okay, this is Ruth Haley Barton. She was trained at the Shalem Institute, the place you just saw. She was trained there and has a certification from there. And the guy that founded the Shalem Institute wrote the foreword to one of her books. Now, what makes her interesting, she is going to be speaking this August 2013. She is going to be one of the speakers at the General Conference for the Assemblies of God. In Orlando, Florida, I believe. So she has gained access to the Assembly of God denomination. And she was she's a spiritual director, and she has an organization called the Transforming Center. And she claims on her website she has trained thousands of Christian leaders. You know, most of them, or many of them, in the evangelical church. Thousands of Christian leaders. And this is what she says. She was being interviewed in a magazine. She says, a few years ago, I began to recognize an inner chaos in my soul. I sought out a spiritual director, who was a Catholic nun, by the way, someone well-versed in the ways of the soul. The spiritual director said to me, what you need is stillness and silence. In other words, the cloud of unknowing. Same thing Schuller was talking about, two-way prayer. And appeal, you know, throw your mind into neutral. Our reliance on words, even in our praying, is often just another way we strive to maintain control. Well, that's not true. When you folks pray, are you trying to maintain control? Well, no, you're talking to God, right? So she lays guilt trips on those that, you know, pray the normal way, that, you know, when you use words in praying, you know, then you're striving to maintain control. We open ourselves to what God wants to give. Prayer without words is not so much about expressing our dependence on God, but rather experiencing it. So when you give up words, you know, like in normal prayer, and just use mantra-type methods, then you really experience God. You really get God. Okay, here we go. This is from her book, interview. She says, "Ask for a simple prayer to express your willingness to meet God in the silence. A simple statement such as, 'Here I am.' Help yourself return to your original intent by repeating the prayer that you have chosen." And by repeating it, she means for like 20 minutes. That's usually in contemplative prayer. That's how long you repeat the mantras, for 20 minutes. So she is saying that if you want to meet God, if you really want to meet God, you have to say, "I am here," for 20 minutes and just focus on it. Well, by using the standard of normal prayer, regular prayer, if somebody called you up on the phone and just said, "I am here," or "Here I am," for 20 minutes, You know, "Hello? Here I am. Here I am. Here I am. Here I am." Okay, how long would it be before you hung up on him? So saying "Here I am" for 20 minutes is not talk. It's not prayer, folks. It is simply not prayer. You know, it is not talking to God. It is repeating a mantra. But she is, like I said, next August, she is going to be speaking at the General Conference for the Assemblies of God. And what are they called in Canada? They have a different name. Yeah, there you go, yeah. Yeah, Pentecostal Assemblies. So if you're familiar with them, she's going to be speaking at their General Conference. I'm sure there'll be quite a number of people from Canada there. And she's going to teach them, you know, this method. Okay, Spiritual Directors International. They're an organization, obviously, of spiritual directors, people that promote this kind of prayer. And this organization claims nearly 10,000 members. You know, 10,000 spiritual directors belong to this organization. And you see their logo there. They got this woman, and they got the, this looks like some kind of, like something out of a science fiction movie, or, you know, there's this round thing, and then this woman goes, "Here I am, take me," you know, and that's their logo. And we can see that in their magazine. Their magazine is called Presence. And, I mean, it's like, you know, like in a horror movie, you know, you go into a house, "I sense a presence in here," you know. Presence means that there's a supernatural force or power that's encompassing you, right? And obviously they believe that the presence is God, but how can we know, how can we maintain that or ascertain that this is the presence of God? Well, this is some of their courses and classes. So would the God of the Bible, would the God of the Old and New Testament, would he, if you were meeting him and you're in his presence, would he lead you into this type of thinking? Okay, spiritual practices of various faith traditions. That means religions, not denominations. Building a bridge to Buddhism. Ignatian exercises and ecology. The Enneagram and Kabbalah. The Sacred Labyrinth, a new spiritual paradigm. Earth prayer, celebrating the interconnection of all living beings. Trans-faith spirituality. Well, this is basic New Age spirituality. This is New Ageism here, folks. And yet, there are 10,000, these spiritual directors are Christian spiritual directors. You know, most of them, probably two-thirds would be Catholic. A lot of them would be mainline Protestant. A lot of, you know, like here in Canada, United Church, Anglican Church, Lutheran Church, that type of thing. And I bet if you went on their website, see, you can check all this out. You don't have to, you know, take it from me. You can, you know, go home, Spiritual Directors International, and you would find there would be spiritual directors all over the place, you know, here in Calgary, Edmonton. And they are teaching people in churches how to get the presence. You know, that's their magazine, Presence. And this presence, You know, the God we worship would never promote this type of thing, right? Would never promote trans-faith spirituality. Would never promote building a bridge to Buddhism, because Jesus said, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, right? Jesus didn't say, you know, I want you to build a bridge to Isis worshipers or Mithra worshipers or, you know, pagan religions. He said, Jesus said that the Father does not hear the prayers of pagans because he has no relationship with them. So the people that are members of this organization are not in touch with the God of the Bible. I can say that with all confidence. This is the man that brought contemplative prayer out of the monasteries and convents and started to spread it around to the laity. And he believed that God is in everybody. He believed that God is in all people. He said, it is a glorious destiny to be a member of the human race. Now I realize what we all are. If only they, that's people, humanity, could all see themselves as they really are, I suppose the big problem would be that we would fall down and worship each other. Why? Well, why would we worship each other if we could see how we really were? At the center of our being is a point, forgive me here, I mean, mystics talk really weird, you know, they use weird terminology. At the center of our being is a point of nothingness, which is untouched by sin and by illusions. In other words, in every person, there's this essence that's untouched by sin. And by illusions, you know, he means like, you know, false perceptions. A point of pure truth. This little point is the pure glory of God in us. And it is in everybody. The pure glory of God is in everybody. Now, that is New Age religion. That is New Age theology. Thomas Merton was a New Ager. By the way, he was... He went to India to be at an international conference, an interfaith conference, and he had his most powerful spiritual, experience at a Buddhist shrine in Sri Lanka. And he was looking at there were all these Buddhist statues, and he was looking at them. All of a sudden it hit him that the Buddha nature is in everything. You know, the Buddha nature is in all there is. And then, He gave a speech at a conference and said, you know, to people of other religions, we are one, you know, we are all part of the same God. And then that night, he was electrocuted in his hotel room while he was taking a bath. The fan, I think, fell in the bathtub or something, but he was electrocuted. Okay, this remember I said last night, one picture is worth 1,000 words? Well, this is at Vancouver School of Theology. This is where they train pastors for the Anglican Church and United Church. And they have a Thomas Merton reading room. And a friend of mine in Vancouver took this picture, and this sums it up. There's Thomas Merton, and below him is what? Yeah, the statue of the Buddha. And like I said, Thomas Merton was basically a Buddhist, and also a Sufi, a Muslim mystic, at a retreat for contemplative women given at Gethsemane Abbey. That's where he was stationed, Gethsemane Abbey in Kentucky. May 1968, he declared, I'm deeply impregnated with Sufism. Now, Sufis are the mystics of Islam. How many have heard of whirling dervishes? Heard that term, whirling dervishes? Well, they're these Sufis. They wear long gowns and they have these big tall hats and they just kind of meditate, you know, they chant mantras and they twirl around, they meditate and they twirl around, and, you know, they're in Turkey. And that's what Sufism is. They're the New Agers of Islam. And he said he was deeply impregnated with Sufism. Now, can a Christian be deeply impregnated with Muslim mysticism? Well, no, but he's at one of the top Bible schools in the States. They have, at their bookstore, they have four shelves devoted to Thomas Merton. This is an evangelical Bible school, and he is so popular, they have four shelves devoted not against him, like a cult or whatever, but by him and about him. He is extremely popular in evangelical circles. Why? I don't know. I can't understand it. Oh, I can understand it. This is Richard Foster. I've talked to him personally. Now, Richard Foster wrote a book called Celebration of Discipline, and it is, I was told that practically every pastor in North America has a copy of that in their library. And one of the major spiritual disciplines is contemplative prayer. And I talked to, in 1994, I met Richard Foster, and I tried to quiz him about this, and I was very nice, you know, I wasn't overbearing. I said, listen, Foster, come clean. You know, I was very nice and meek. I was even humble and meek, and I tried to find out just what was going on here. And he was very, very adamant. This is what he did. I'm standing here, and he goes, well, Thomas Merton tried to awaken God's people. You know, he said it just like that. He's looking down at the ground. He said it. He didn't say it matter of fact. He didn't say it, you know, ho-hum. He goes, Thomas Merton tried to awaken God's people, like real conviction. And I knew then and there, because he mentioned Thomas Merton 15 times in Celebration of Discipline. So if you quote somebody 15 times, that means you like them, right? Unless you're writing about somebody that you don't like, you know, then you know that, you know, you're against them. But if you're writing a book and you quote somebody favorably 15 times, that means, you know, you're on the same page with them. And that's the confirmation I got. And there we have it. Thomas Merton trying to awaken God's people. And also, in his book, he says, on page 13, we should all, without shame, enroll in the school of contemplative prayer. And by all, he means all. And remember what we started this talk, that the Christian of the future will be a mystic, or they will not exist at all. And, you know, mysticism is not just for a few, it's for all Christians. Well, this is what these people are working for, that someday, you know, maybe soon, that what we know as Christianity will be the same as what Thomas Merton practiced. That mysticism, everybody will be in touch with God through contemplative prayer. There's Henry Nouwen. He would be like the number two. Merton would be number one in popularity, and Henry Nouwen would be number two. Henry Nouwen is a Catholic priest, and he wrote numerous books on contemplative prayer. And he actually, you know, this is kind of scary. You remember last night I talked about the chakras? You know, Reiki and yoga are based on the chakras. Okay, Henry Nouwen, he wrote an autobiography. I can't remember the name, but something about my journey or something like that. And he said, now this is really creepy. He said that while he was exercising, he was on an exercise bike, you know, in a gym. And while he was on this exercise bike, he would listen to tapes about the chakras, you know. Well, the chakras are at the heart of New Age spirituality. Now, why would he be listening to tapes on the chakras? He was also, like I should say, you know, he was a major promoter of contemplative prayer and very much into sympathetic with Buddhism. He said, Sabbatical Journey, that's it. That was the name of his autobiography, Sabbatical Journey. He said, today I personally believe that while Jesus came to open the door to God's house, all human beings can walk through that door whether they know about Jesus or not. Today I see it as my call to help every person claim his or her own way to God. You know, whether it's Buddhist, Hindu, Muslim, you know, New Age. So, you know, he is widely quoted in evangelical circles. He also said, and this is what Merton said, remember Merton said if we all knew who we really were, we'd fall down and worship each other, right? Well, Nouwen said, the God who dwells in our inner sanctuary is also the God who dwells in the inner sanctuary of each human being. So in other words, these two major champions of contemplative prayer believe that God is in every person, every human being. Well, that's what Reiki and yoga believes, you know? That's what the New Age believes, is that God is in every person. You don't need to pass from, remember what in John, he who hears my word and believes on him who sent me, you know, has eternal life and will not come into condemnation, but will pass from death, you know, unto life. So, see, Christianity teaches that we're born separated from God, and when we believe the gospel and have faith in Jesus Christ, then we're born again. We pass from death unto life, right? But they're saying that, you know, when you're born, you have God in you. You don't need to pass from death unto life. You need to realize that you're divine, that you're God. Okay, Sue Monk Kidd, she's the perfect example of what I'm talking about. She was a Baptist, Southern Baptist Sunday school teacher in a small town in South Carolina. You know, really conservative. Southern Baptist Sunday school teacher. And someone handed her, in Sunday school, now she didn't go to some New Age center, somebody handed her a book by Thomas Merton in her Sunday school class. Handed her a book by Thomas Merton, and she started to do it. She said, "I found a host of Christian thinkers and saints talking about a way of being with God, a way of needing him. I still have kind of a fuzzy here. And experiencing him in the depths of one's being. That opened the door to oneness with him. They called it contemplation." So she found, this is a book she wrote, God's Joyful Surprise. I got watery eyes for some reason. "I was amazed to realize that I had known practically nothing about this ancient and powerful tradition of Christian meditation. I was ready." So she started reading Merton, and, you know, she said, "Oh, I didn't know there was such a thing as contemplation, and, you know, I need this, you know, this is for me, I was ready." And God's Joyful Surprise, this book, was promoted by some major Christian magazines. It was Virtue Magazine's best book of the year. If you remember Virtue Magazine, a Christian, I think it was a Christian woman's magazine. Okay, it said, "A joy to read from beginning to end." Okay, today's Christian woman said, "The message and challenge of the book is profound." And then Moody Monthly said, "Kids suggest some disciplines for cultivating some interior quietness and a richer personal experience of God's love." Now that was Moody Monthly, which is an arm of Moody Bible Institute. So these major Christian magazines were promoting her book that, you know, if you want to know God, this is how you do it. Well, she comes out with her third book. This is where it leads, called Dance of the Dissident Daughter. So her first two books were, you know, sounded somewhat Christian. But now she said, and this is, it says a time of departing, but I have the reference in the back. She says, this is what happened. She's in her church, you know, she'd been doing contemplative prayer, and she's sitting in her Southern Baptist church, and she had the following experience. The minister was preaching. He was holding up a Bible. It was open, perched atop his raised hand, as if a blackbird had landed there. He was saying that the Bible was the sole and ultimate authority of the Christian's life. The sole and ultimate authority. I remember a feeling rising up from a place about 2 inches below my navel. It was a passionate, determined feeling, and it spread out from the core of me like a current so that my skin vibrated with it. If feelings could be translated in English, this feeling would have been roughly been the word no. It was the purest inner knowing I had experienced. It was shouting in me, "No, no, no, the ultimate authority in my life is not the Bible. It is not confined between the covers of a book. It is not something written by men and frozen in time. It is not from a source outside myself. My ultimate authority is the divine voice in my own soul, period." So what does she believe now? We also need goddess consciousness to reveal earth's holiness. Matter becomes inspirited. It breathes divinity. Earth becomes alive and sacred. Goddess offers us the holiness of everything. As I grounded myself in feminine spiritual experience, which is goddess experience, that fall I was initiated into my body in a deeper way. I came to know myself as an embodiment of goddess. In other words, she was a goddess. She was divine. So she went from being a Baptist Sunday school teacher to goddess. Mystical awakening in all the great religious traditions, including Christianity, involves arriving at an experience of unity or non-dualism. In other words, all is one. In Zen Buddhism, it's known as samadhi. The day of my awakening was the day I saw all things in God and all things. So she became a New Ager in the context of a Sunday school class, you know, rather than going to an outright New Age center. Along with Thomas Merton, Richard Foster uses Su Mung Kid as an example of someone who practices contemplative prayer in his book Prayer Finding the Heart's True Home, in the chapter on contemplative prayer. So Richard Foster, you know, if you go to that book, you will see Thomas Merton, Su Mung Kid, and Basil Pennington listed in that chapter as being, you know, the examples of... How long do I got?
8 minutes.
I got 8 minutes, so the emerging church. Okay, the emerging church, contemplative prayer is at the heart of what's called the emerging church. Brian McLaren, in a feature article in Christianity Today titled "The Emergent Mystique," Brian McLaren, is the man referred to as the de facto leader of the movement, named Richard Foster as one of the key mentors for the emerging church. And by key mentors, he means, you know, celebration of discipline, the practice of mystical prayer. And Brian McLaren is coming from, I'll have to speed it up here. There's this book called Reimagining Christianity by Alan Jones, who is an Episcopal priest, the equivalent of Anglican here in Canada. And he wrote that the life of contemplative prayer, loved and in communion with all things, the soul is born in and out of the secret silence of God. This silence is at the heart of mysticism, is not only the meeting point of the great traditions or religions, but also where all hearts might meet. In other words, all of humanity will be connected in the silence. All of humanity, not just all religions, but all of humanity will meet in this mystical silence. And notice the picture there. There's it's a car dashboard, and there's a cross. And this right here is a Buddha, statue of Buddha. So we have the cross and Buddha together. They're united. And Brian McLaren endorsed this book on the back cover. He said, "It used to be the Christian institutions and systems of dogma sustained the spiritual life of Christians." By dogma, he means doctrine. Increasingly, spirituality itself is what sustains everything else. By spirituality, he means mysticism. Alan Jones is a pioneer in reimagining a Christian faith that emerges from authentic spirituality. His work stimulates and encourages me deeply. So, you know, authentic spirituality is, you know, the contemplative prayer mode. This is Tony Jones, major emergent leader. He wrote a book called The Sacred Way. He says, "The basic method promoted in the cloud," that's the cloud of unknowing, "is to move beyond thinking into a place of utter stillness with the Lord. The believer must first achieve a state of silence and contemplation, and then God works in the believer's heart." So this is at the heart, the essence of the emerging church movement. Okay, Sacred Pathways, Gary Thomas. Basically, he says that it is particularly difficult to describe this type of prayer in writing, as it is best taught in person. In general, however, centering prayer, which is contemplative prayer, works like this. Choose a word, Jesus or Father, for example, as a focus for contemplative prayer. Repeat the word silently in your mind for a set amount of time, say 20 minutes, until your heart seems to be repeating the word by itself, just as naturally and voluntarily is breathing. Well, if you say a word for more than half a minute, it just becomes a sound. Well, Rick Warren says, "Gary has spoken at Saddleback, and I think highly of his work. He tells them, readers, how they can make the most of their spiritual journeys. He places an emphasis on practical spiritual exercises." Practical spiritual exercises. This is from his Ministry Toolbox, 2002. These contemplatives also recognize, this is a book called Setting the Gospel Free by Brian Taylor, who's a Episcopal or Anglican bishop or priest, I mean. These contemplatives also recognize their soulmates in other traditions, as did Thomas Merton in his pilgrimage to Buddhist Asia. This is because they have passed beyond the confines of religion as a closed system to an open awareness of God in life. So people like us, they would say, we have this closed system. So you have to move beyond that. He also said the God he, Thomas Merton, knew in prayer was the same experience that Buddhists describe in their enlightenment. That's why Sue Monk Kidd, when she started reading Merton and went on to being a contemplative prayer practitioner, ultimately wound up with a Buddhist perspective on who God is. So what is the verdict on Christian mysticism, contemplative prayer? If they were really so close to God, they would understand and embrace the gospel to a degree that would be perfectly clear. But in reality, contemplative prayer has taken them in the opposite direction. Instead of being valiant stewards of the Great Commission, it has caused them to be immersed in spiritual adultery. And I believe that is the essence, that people that do this become involved in spiritual adultery. And this is sweeping our churches and our Bible colleges and our seminaries. And I believe this is the falling away that Paul wrote of in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. That day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. Thank you.